You are now listening to Trust in the Process, the podcast that celebrates Black women doing big things by unpacking the journey and sharing life lessons along the way. I'm your host, Deborah Chosen. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Trust in the Process, the podcast that celebrates Black women doing big things. I am so excited to be recording today. I'm just like, guys, it's been a minute. It has been a very, very long time. It's been 11 months, to be precise. It has been 11 God-given months since we had a real conversation on this platform, right? And it's crazy thinking about it. A lot has happened, not just in my own world, I'm sure, but in the world, right? In the wider world, in your world, I'm sure. In these last 11 months that we haven't really been in communication. If you are subscribed to the Trust in the Process letter community, then, you know, hopefully you would have had some updates from me here and there. You know, shout out to TTP crew that really, really be rocking with your girl because they're subscribed. You know, you guys would have been having a few different letters from me from time to time about my own journey and how I'm trusting my own process. As you guys know, that's what I'm all about, right? But I did take, I guess you could say, an unexpected hiatus. Pretty much for the whole of last year, pretty much. So we're going to be getting a little bit into that. In fact, we're going to get a lot into that. The real tea is that I've actually recorded this episode before. So I'm currently recording this on March the 16th. It is a Tuesday. And this episode is going to be released on Thursday the 18th, right? So for those that don't know, moving forward, new season, new look, all that kind of stuff, the episodes will be released bi-weekly every Thursday. So make sure that you have your notifications turned on, whatever platform you're on, whether it's Spotify, it's iTunes, it's SoundCloud, whatever, right? Make sure you have your notifications turned on because you will be able to keep in the know with the podcast. And I have a lot that I'm excited to share with you guys in this season, but we're going to get into that in a second. So I have a lot that I'm looking forward to sharing with you guys in season two. Of course, you can expect the same great conversations that I've had in times past with amazing Black women who are doing big things. That will always be the heart of this podcast, right? And you will continue to have from me, you know, these little one-to-one episodes where we just get real up close and personal. Like sometimes I be listening back to some of my solo episodes and I'm like, did I really tell the people that? Did I really get that naked and transparent? But there's something about really podcasting that really allows you, I think, to be able to do that, right? And I think this year and in this season, the season two, I just want to go even deeper. I want to go even more real with y'all, even more myself, more authentic, and just bring those same great conversations to you. So I'm really excited because we've got a lot of amazing guests coming up from all over, and yeah, it's going to be fantastic. So make sure you stick around. And before I do dive into the episode, I really want to say a huge thank you to every single person who has supported Trust in the Process up until this point. It has been a ride from the newsletter community through to doing TTP Live, the event, through to Lockdown Live, which happened on Instagram. It's been a journey. It's been a journey and it's really just beginning. It's really, really just beginning. I feel like I'm really coming into my own. And I'm just super grateful for the community that continue to support the content that we create here. So yeah, none of this would be possible without you guys. So a huge, huge thank you to you. I had to get that off my chest first and foremost. Now let's dive in to this episode, okay? A happy new year to you guys. How has your 2021 been so far? What have you learned? In what ways are you growing? What things have you had to unlearn? How's the process been for you? For myself, if someone asked me, how was your 2020? Honestly, 2020 for me, and I'm sure for many people, was that year. It was a year of challenges. It was a year of hurt. It was a year of loss. changes, transitions, growth, grief, but also joy and love. It was everything kind of just wrapped up into one. And I think, you know, the jury's kind of out on the fact that this was the case for a lot of us. You know, 2020 for many people was a shifting year. It was a year where you began to see things differently. We literally were forced to see the world differently, for example, right? Many of us are now at our year anniversary of working from home. Like, who would have thought? Right? Who would have thought we would be here now in this way? Sadly, many have also lost loved ones over the last, you know, year. It's been a really harrowing time. Some have lost opportunities. Some have lost finances. Others may have lost love. Whatever the case may be, I think there's kind of a universal understanding when we say 2020 was a year and a half, right? So before I really jump into, I guess, what I had to navigate in 2020, I will give you guys this real tea, which is that this episode, this is not my first rodeo. Let's put it that way. I have recorded this episode, I think twice beforehand, before today. And the first time I recorded it was some point last year towards the end of the year. I think it was like November or something. I sat down, you know, did my usual kind of setup and began to speak. And I recorded the episode and I don't even remember how long it was. All I remember is the emotions in what I was describing, retelling my story, my journey. My 2020, the emotions were so raw, because it was so recent. It was my present. I was speaking about my present, right? So it was really, really difficult for me to share in a way that I felt comfortable. So when I listened back to the original episode that I recorded, for me, it was very much so a huge vent with not really any conclusion, right, or any real learning at the other end. And that's not to say that there isn't value in sharing purely for the sake of sharing. It's not to say that everything we share has to have a lesson attached to it. But I was mindful of the fact that in the current state I was in, the emotional state I was in, I had to consider how helpful really is this episode going to be to people, or actually rather, could it be triggering, you know, because there was no way of rounding it off. I didn't yet have a conclusion to the matter. I still don't to a certain extent, but I've since grown. I've since learned new ways of looking at, you know, the year that I went through. And so, yeah, when I went to go and edit, I was just like, I can't do this. This is not the version these people are going to get. And I realized that it was just because it was so raw. It was just so fresh, right? And that in itself taught me something about sharing and about the right time to share, right? Like the Bible says in Ecclesiastes 3, you know, there is a time for everything, right? There's a time to cry. There's a time to laugh. There's a time to share, and there's also a time to hold, right? And I think at that point, I wasn't yet ready. You know, I wasn't yet ready to share in this way. And it's funny, sitting down talking to you guys now, it's like, okay, because I'm at a different stage in the process, a little bit further along, and I've had the help of therapy, introspectiveness, prayer, friends and family to just hold me and help me answer some questions that I had, I feel that I can better take you guys through that journey with me. So yeah, I'm looking forward to just doing that today. So as I said, 2020 for me was, if I had to do one word, like really one word, possibly life-changing. And it's so funny because it was life-changing in good ways and bad ways, right? So one of the things that I've noticed about life, or I've come to recognize about life, is that the good and the bad is often happening simultaneously. And so at any given point, sometimes the best and the worst things are happening to us simultaneously. And so, yeah, I'm just going to walk you guys through, I guess, a timeline of sorts of the different events that stood out to me as being significant, you know, in my 2020, right? And I do want to say before I kind of go deeper into this, that there will be some mention of mental health. There will also be some mention of sickness. And so I guess trigger warning, just in case you're in a space where that may be triggering for you, please do feel free to exit at this point. Anyways, onto the timeline. So what really inspired me to do the whole timeline thing was actually starting therapy. And first of all, if you manage to survive 2020 without getting a therapist, you must be superhuman. This might sound really strange, but I've always wanted to have therapy. It's always actually been a desire. It's something that I wanted. And the way I frame it is that therapy was always something that I wanted, but after 2020, it became something that I needed, right? So it went from being a want to a need. But either way, I started therapy towards the end of last year. We really, really got into it this year. But I officially started towards the end of 2020, right? And one of the sessions that we had, one of the first sessions, involved me and my therapist talking about the year that I'd had, right? So kind of what's brought you here. And I recognized in that moment, as I kind of just began to speak and tell her everything that had happened in 2020, I recognized that sis had been through a lot. Sis had been through a lot. Like, I knew it, but I think there's nothing like having someone else who is unbiased and professional to respond, to kind of affirm you in that, in the fact that, you know, you've been through some things. It's been a challenging time, to say the least. And so as I was actually taking her through my journey, little did I know she was writing bullet points. So she was basically creating a timeline of the events that I was mentioning. And so I'm going to take you guys right from the beginning through to today. Okay. So the year began on quite a high. I think everyone had that 2020 energy, you know, that now sounds negative because of the year 2020 was. But at the time, everyone had that, oh my gosh, it's a new decade energy, right? Everyone was doing the whole 2020 year of vision. Side note, we see very clearly now, don't we? Yeah. Anyways, be careful what you ask for. But, you know, everyone was kind of like, a lot of people were feeling this new surge of inspiration and of energy. And it's funny, it was like the year that everyone was so determined to get it, like whether it was secure the bag or it was secure bae, like everyone was so determined to get it. And then life just got locked down. But anyways, we'll go into that. But my year began similarly like that, right? I was kind of like, ooh, yeah, gonna get it. Yeah. Vision board. Yeah. And, but on the flip side, I actually began the year in a very mentally fragile state, I guess you could say. So I had previously, in just at the end of 2019, I'd actually gone on stress leave from my at the time job. I no longer work there, but it was a season where my work life was insane. Like it was just not livable. It wasn't workable. The circumstances, the conditions under which we were having to work. You know, I had experienced major toxicity, you know, bullying, micromanaging, like everything you can imagine. And then in the midst of all of this, the company that I was with were actually going through liquidation. Okay. So it was a really, really, really crazy time in that company. And as a result of it, I couldn't cope any longer. And after a while, feeling like my voice wasn't being heard as well, trying to speak up, you know, to HR and to the people around me, who are supposed to advocate for, you know, my mental health in the workplace, I had to take matters into my own hands. So at the end of 2019, I had actually pretty much, no, it's not even pretty much, I had emotionally burnt out, I'd mentally burnt out. And so I actually went to my GP and I requested time off from work. Simple. So I was granted the time off, and I think I had it for about 3 weeks that I was away from work, right? And that in itself was a very, I feel like those 3 weeks felt like being in rehab or something. It was like I learned how to breathe again, you know, not being in that environment, not needing to wake up and go to that environment, an environment where someone's telling you like you're not good at what you do, who are you, and making you question the very essence of like the work that you've been doing, like you've been doing for so many years, right? And so just to bring you guys into the context of where I began the year. So I began 2020 at the tail end of this sick leave, right? It was actually time for me to return back to work. And I think it was probably the second week in January that it was time, not even the second week, sorry, it was the first week in January. And I was due to return to work after having these 3 weeks off. So I was sort of in a fragile space because I was much better. I was well rested. You know, my mental health was a lot stronger. However, there was a lot of apprehension and fear because I was about to enter back into the lion's den. Do you get what I mean? So I was kind of still psyching myself up for that. I was leaning into joy as much as I could. I was just enjoying whatever I could find to enjoy. I was enjoying it, right? And whether that was self-care, whether that was spending time with loved ones, that's just what I was doing. Needless to say, it came to the point that it was time to return to work. So it's interesting because it was actually the weekend before returning to work. It was a Saturday. I'll never forget that. But it was Saturday, the 4th of January, I believe, when I received a missed call from my dad and a text message basically saying that my mom had been taken to hospital, that I need to call him back as soon as possible. I was with someone at the time, so I wasn't by myself. So I had the strength, I guess, to make that call. And of course, you know, initially, when anyone sends you such a message, the worst goes through your mind. Like, I think we can all kind of empathize with that rush of feelings and thoughts of what has happened. And at the time as well, I should add for context, you know, I was living in London, and my family are from, they're not really from, they're definitely from Nigeria, but my family live in Birmingham. And so there was already the distance thing. So, you know, I'm far away, so to speak, and I received this message and this missed call. And so I proceed to call my dad back, of course, straight away after a lot of deep breathing. And by the time I managed to speak to him, my dad informed me that my mom had unfortunately had a stroke and had been taken to the hospital. So my initial reaction was a lot. And there was a lot of crying, there was a lot of wailing, a lot of pain, and a lot of fear, especially when my dad went on to express, you know, the extent in which she had been impacted by the stroke. So he went on to inform me that, you know, she's currently unable to speak as a result of the stroke, because that can be one of the side effects of those who suffer a stroke. But then on top of that, she was also paralyzed as a result of the stroke. So the stroke had impacted, for those that don't know, when you have a stroke, I think depending on what type of stroke it is, I'm not a doctor, but the type of stroke that she had anyways, it impacted one side of the brain. And the way that the body works is if the left side of the brain is suffers trauma, like a stroke, then the right side, so the corresponding side, will be affected. So within my mother's case, her right side was impacted, affecting the right side of the brain was impacted, affecting the left side of her body, left side of her movement. So she was essentially paralyzed within her left arm, her left leg, and unable to speak, you know, unable to verbalize, you know, as I'm doing so right now. And so I would say at that moment, everything changed for me in the year. Every single thing changed from that moment. It's interesting because I come from a family who we're really no stranger to battling through different sicknesses as a family. I've experienced it from every member of my family minus myself. So I've had to be there for my mom before, I've had to be there for my dad before, I've had to be there for my brother. You know, we've had our fair share of health challenges in that regard. But this, something about this was more challenging than previous mountains that we'd had to climb. And I think for me, what it was is the idea that my mother had essentially become disabled. And when someone suffers a stroke and they're no longer able to speak or to like verbalize and communicate in a way that they normally would, it's a very strange sort of grief that's attached to it, because it's as if you've lost the person, but the person is still here, right? So my mom is very much, you know, very much still there in physical form. But when you can't communicate with that person in that same way, you can't, you know, hear their voice like you used to. It's sort of like there is a shadow of the person who you once knew. And I think that was a very tricky type of grief, and has been a very tricky kind of grief to navigate, because, you know, my mom is, by God's grace, and I'm so grateful, still here. Like, she's still here in physical form. She's still with us, right? But the way in which we are able to experience her, and I guess the way in which she is also able to experience the world, has completely changed, right? And so that requires a certain level of making peace with. But not long after my mom suffered the stroke, I was advised to return back to work, actually, by my dad, bless him. But, you know, he was like, you can come and visit on the weekend, see her in hospital, but still go to work, because you've been gone for 3 weeks, like, you need to go back, right? So I returned to work and everything, and I'm trying to get back into the groove of things now, where, you know, we're still in January. And I remember there was a particular day when I received a call from a family friend to let me know that my dad was going to need to be admitted to hospital. So you can imagine, at this point, I'm like, okay, God, like, I don't understand. Like, I definitely didn't understand what you're doing with my mom, but now I'm like, what's going on? Because we're talking a few weeks apart, and a second parent is being admitted to hospital. Now, in my dad's case, it was entirely different to my mom's, because it was actually related to mental health. So it was related to depression at the time, right? So following on from my mom's, I guess you could say, diagnosis and new way of being, that was really hard on all of us. That was really hard on us as a family, but I think my dad especially took it very, very hard, and as a result of it, you know, fell into a really, really, really scary dark place. Really, really, really scary. And so there was a lot happening at once. I remember sitting at work and just not being able to be present at all. Like, I would try, but part of my mind was on my mom, another part was on my dad, and another part was on my brother, and thinking, you know, is everyone going to be okay? I need to go back home, etc., etc. And I remember at the time not feeling supported in my job with this, you know, with this challenge in my life, even though I'd had all the conversations with HR to say, yo, hey, I'm back from my stress leave, but just to let you know, this is what I'm currently dealing with, right? And it might impact the way I show up at work, but I'm still here. I'm still willing to try. And so everything kind of came to a crescendo, I guess, when my dad began to have thoughts of not being here, right? Of no longer being here, no longer being with us, and having to convince your own father, you know, to have the will to live is a really strange position to be in. I recognize now, looking back, that I spent a lot of 2020 in autopilot, because I simply had to. I didn't really have the luxury of, how'd I put it? I didn't really have the luxury of being weak, because my strength, my dad's health kind of depended on my strength, and also my mom's did to a certain extent, right? And so there was a lot of carrying. There was a lot of pressure. I had to grow up in another kind of way that I could never have imagined. To those of you who maybe have experience of caring for a parent in any kind of capacity, when you are required to play the role of a carer, for one or two, however many parents, it changes you. Like, it's a very transformative experience. And so actually in this moment, I really want to honor any person who may be experiencing that, who may be playing that role of a carer, whether it's for your parent or it's just for a loved one. We are not celebrated enough. We are not supported enough. And I see that now. You know, I've only been doing this support carer thing for a year. So I'm in by no means, you know, an authority on the experience, on the lived experience. I'm new to this, but it makes me kind of empathize even more with those who may have years under their belt of living their life in this type of way and having to be there for a loved one or a family member in this capacity. And it's a real hard job. And so I just really want to honor you in this moment. And if you know anyone who plays the role of a carer for a loved one, I want to encourage you to just reach out to them. Just, you don't have to mention all of that stuff, but you can just send them some love. Like, just be thinking of them where you can, because yeah, oftentimes you're so under the weight of everything that you're doing that you don't even have the strength to reach out to other people for help. And also sometimes in reaching out to other people, you don't want to like bring back up the pain that you're dealing with. So, you know, that was my experience anyways in 2020, that I would go through seasons where I would kind of, I guess I would sort of do like this brain dump thing, like a brain fart, where I would just, where one person would ask me how I am, who I'm not even that close to, and I would just tell them my entire life story. I'd be like, well, my dad's suicidal, my mom's paralyzed, my brother's da, 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 da. It was just a lot, right? It would just pour out of me a verbal diarrhea because I've needed the release. And then I'd have these other seasons where maybe even my friends would call me and they'd want to know, like, from a very kind and caring place, they'd want to know how I am, how I'm doing, like, what am I going through? And I would be like, I'm really sorry, I just don't have it within me to have this conversation right now, but thank you so much for making yourself present in this moment, you know? So I think that's the thing about grief as well, that it doesn't have one face. It has many colors, and sometimes it's really, really blue, and other times it's pink and it's like lighter and it's a bit more livable, and other times it's red and it's anger, right? And it's questioning, God, why me, or why them, or why are we here? And I think in some way, shape or form, many of us have experienced grief in the last year, you know, even if you haven't lost a loved one, and I pray that is your case, even if you haven't lost a loved one, I think we've all experienced loss in some sort of capacity, right? Whether it's been the loss of a job, right? As I said earlier, the loss of opportunities, the loss of a relationship, the loss of time, the loss of a dream. All of these things represent a different type of grief, and they show up and can be felt in a different way in different seasons. But all of these feelings are still valid, right? All of these feelings are still valid. And so I think for me, 2020, what it was about was making peace with these feelings, was making peace with these emotions, was making peace with my new normal, not just the pandemic. That at one point, that was just like additional background noise. Like, I say that with all respect, but that was just like, oh my gosh, so in the midst of everything that's going on in my home, there's also a pandemic outside. Like, in the midst of everything, there's this. Yeah, a lot of it was about refinding myself, relearning myself in this new normal, you know, in this new way of living. So let's go back to where we're at in the story. And as I mentioned, of course, you know, at this point, my mother and my father are essentially in hospital, right? In different hospitals, somewhere in Birmingham. And I have to make the decision in this moment as to what I'm going to do, because I need to be with my family at this point, right? I need to be at home. There's no more keeping up appearances to do here at work. There's nothing left to prove. So I remember one morning, it was around 6:30 in the morning, and I randomly woke up earlier than usual, and I looked at my phone and there was a missed call from my dad. So this was before he had actually been admitted to the hospital, but they were, people at home were preparing to take him to hospital, right? And I saw this missed call, and I just remember thinking at the time, my dad does not call me at 6:30 in the morning under normal circumstances. Now, of course, as I mentioned, he was currently going through depression, and so, you know, his mental health state had already been deteriorating. I'd already seen the signs and things like that, but to call me at that time was quite out of the blue. And I just remember seeing the missed call and my heart just racing and going to the worst case scenario, right? And there was all this anxiety on the inside of me, and I remember thinking, I've missed the call, he needed me and I've missed the call. And I remember I tried to call back and there was no answer. And so I'm kind of hyperventilating, kind of freaking out now, until eventually I managed to get through to my brother. And thankfully, he was able to confirm that my dad was there, my dad was safe. But yes, he was being taken to the hospital. So I remember kind of having to like navigate that over the phone. So having to maneuver my brother around, advise him to like watch over my dad, but then also check that this is happening, and just having to kind of, I guess, logistically coordinate things from London when my family are in Birmingham. It was just a very strange experience. And by the time I got off the phone and I was aware that, you know, my dad was being admitted to hospital, I had to make a decision about this job. Something had to give. So I remember I went to the kitchen right there and then. I called HR and I basically handed in my notice in that moment. But I actually made it quite clear to them that I was not prepared to work a notice because I needed to be at home immediately at this point, right? And for more context, I had been giving them literally week on week updates about, you know, the health of my parents so that they could kind of see this coming, right? And so that was it. I stood in my kitchen, I quit, I packed a suitcase and I got in my car. And I remember I didn't even have time to like let my landlord know or really let my friends know, actually. It was a bit of a crazy time. And I just got in my car and I just drove to Birmingham. And I remember the whole way I was thinking, it's like something new, my life was going to change from this point, right? And it did. It absolutely did. And as I drove home, it's funny because I didn't really have a long-term plan. I didn't know how long I'd be required to be at home. All I knew in this moment was that my mom was sick, my dad was sick, I needed to be at home. And so fast forward, and a year later, your girl still lives here in Birmingham. And that in itself, y'all, we'll do it. We'll probably do another episode about that another time in terms of moving and transitions, because I could probably write a book on it at this point. But that in itself came with so many learnings and growth opportunities, let's put it that way, because I had not lived in Birmingham for about 4 years at that point. I'd lived by myself for the last 4 years. I hadn't lived back with my family. You know, there was just so much in that move that I had to navigate, whilst of course navigating my new role in the family dynamic. So that was really, really interesting. So for the next month or so, my brother and I would basically take it in turns to visit my mom and my dad. We would kind of like do it in shifts. Like, you seeing mom tonight? Okay, I'm gonna go see dad. And that's how we did things basically for about a month, until by God's grace, my dad was released. You know, he was discharged. And made a great recovery and returned home. About a couple of months after his discharge, my mom was also given the opportunity to come back home. But with that, you know, we were, I guess, thrown into, yeah, this new normal, like I said. You know, she'd be coming home, which was an amazing news, but she'd be coming home and we would need to make this home accessible to her in terms of, you know, the limitations that she now had physically. She'd be coming home, but we needed to, you know, figure out speech therapy, physical therapy, all these different appointments, a carer. Do we get a live-in carer? Can we do it by ourselves? All of this kind of stuff. And so I guess we began the painful and long process of helping my mom with rehabilitation, whilst of course supporting my dad, you know, with his mental health recovery also. And so most of my days were spent really not having the time to come up for air. Like I said before, the role of a carer is super difficult. It's also quite a paradigm shift. Because you almost have to step into a parental role for your parents. And so the whole dynamic just changes. It just changes. You know, I think it's commonly said that it's a weird notion, but it's true that like the older we get, as we become elderly, we sort of go back into childlike form, you know, things that you were able to do in your stronger years, you're suddenly not able to do. And in many ways, it's like learning how to walk all over again, right? And I think, interestingly, the thing with the way that the stroke impacted my mom is it was just like that. You know, it has been learning how to walk all over again. It has also been learning how to talk all over again. And those are things that, you know, we take for granted. And so that's been a process. And even on that, I think part of the reason why I'm able to record this episode now is, you know, before when I wanted to record the episode, I was like, right, wham, in the middle of it. I was in the middle of the process. I didn't have answers. There wasn't much progress. And it was really, really, really difficult. And now, although I'm still navigating, you know, this life in terms of, you know, being back at home and to a certain extent caring for, you know, my mom, and, you know, we're still believing God for full recovery, I'm really blessed that along the way there have been many miracles in this process. Some of them are so close to home and honestly so personal that I won't really get into it in this episode, maybe at a later date and maybe in a different space. But there have been so many miracles in this process. I'm talking supernatural healing that has taken place, right? I remember sitting down with the doctors while my mom was in hospital and my dad was in hospital, so I had to kind of step in as next of kin, so to speak, and have this meeting with the doctors about basically my mom's diagnosis and her chances of, I guess, living a life like the one that she previously knew. And, you know, to sit there and hear the doctors say, it's likely that your mom will never walk again. I remember there were just tears that just flew out of my tear ducts. They just literally flew out of my eyes as I was coming to terms with their diagnosis and with what could be, right? But it's crazy because looking at her today, she's already defied the odds, right? She's already proven that God is so much greater than any report that you may get, right? Any report that you may get, whether it's about your bills, whether it's about your health, whether it's about your loved one, whatever the case may be, God honestly does have the final say. And whilst her story is not yet complete, right? Her healing is not yet perfected. We're not at the end of this journey. I am still in the middle, but I'm a little bit further along. That's where I choose to put my faith. I think one of the most challenging things, and I really, really want to speak to this, because I think for those who have prayed against a sickness or prayed for the survival of a loved one, I think they can relate in that one of the hardest things I experienced with my mom and also my dad to a certain extent being sick and being unwell was that my prayer life really, it was really challenged. It was really challenged because what I used to always war with is, what does faith look like in this moment? Is faith believing for the best and testing God in that, you know, you will complete this healing? God, I refuse to believe the report of these doctors. I believe that you will complete her healing. You know, she will walk again, etc., etc. Or is faith me saying, do you know what, God, even if you don't complete this healing, you are still good? And for me, it was an oxymoron at the time to do the two. It didn't make sense because acknowledging that God may not do it for me felt like undermining the faith that he may or that he will even, right? It wasn't possible for me. What I really warred with and really battled with was how to do the two, or which side do I choose, right? So in some seasons I was like, no, God, I'm determined to still believe. I'm still determined to see this through. And then in other seasons I was like, okay, it doesn't look like you're gonna do it. So maybe I need to change my prayer. And you know what, God, like, even if you don't, you're still good. But for a long time, that wasn't That wasn't true to me. That wasn't true. It wasn't genuine. I wasn't there yet. And so I definitely entered a season where I just didn't know what to pray. I didn't have the words. And I say season, it was a lot of 2020. I didn't have the words to pray. I didn't know any longer, you know, because God would show up and he would heal her in an area, and you know, my faith would grow. And then, you know, you wouldn't see the healing in another area. And I'd be like, I don't know where I stand here, God. Do you know what I mean? I don't know what you want from me. That's literally how I was feeling. I don't know what you want from me. Because if you are who you say you are, then you're able to do exceedingly and abundantly over all that we can ask or think. And so what's going on? Because I ain't seen the exceeding and I ain't seen the abundant. But it's crazy because although, like I said before, things have not been perfected and completed, at least to, you know, the human eye, in terms of the healing in my mom, there have already been so many sure signs that God is working and God is moving. And I think that when we are in seasons like that, we have to cling to those moments. We have to cling to those moments. I've heard people say, you know, why not do both? Like, why not believe for the best but prepare for the worst? And I'm here for that, but I think it's also a lot easier said than done when, you know, it becomes your reality. And so honestly, I don't really know where I'm at with that journey as of today, but I still choose to believe that God will do what he said he will do. And I think on a personal note, one of the biggest challenges in that year for me was coming to terms, it almost sounds like, girl, really? But at the time, one of the biggest challenges was coming to terms with the fact that I couldn't always show up in the way I wanted to. Not because I didn't want to, but simply because I no longer had the capacity. And when I say that, when I speak about showing up, I'm speaking very, very solely to showing up online and to showing up for the brand, you know, and my community, this, the podcast, showing up on Instagram. I couldn't do it. And whilst, you know, you guys hearing the story relayed, it's probably like, well, of course you couldn't do it. You went through quite a lot, right? And I've not even gone into everything, but we've gone pretty deep, right? But at the time, because I sometimes have a tendency to be really hard on myself, right? And to believe that I'm superwoman, and I am, but like also I should be allowed to break, right? Because of that tendency, it's like there was this resistance in me to accept my new normal, right? To accept that, right, Deborah, before, you lived alone, you know, you weren't in a pandemic, your mom wasn't sick, your dad wasn't sick, no one was knocking on your door asking you to help them, right? You could just set up a microphone and you could just record, or you could just sit down and do an IGTV, you know, you could do those things. But in this new space, in this new season, there are obstacles to that. And I don't even want to call them obstacles because that comes across as insensitive. There are higher priorities, right? Because my reality was one that I would never have signed up for. But it was still here. It was my reality. And so I spent a lot of 2020 holding myself to past standards or the standards of others around me in terms of productivity. When the truth was that for me, life had completely changed. My capacity changed. The desire was still there to create, but the capacity to create was absent. And it took for me to get to the end of 2020 to realize that I need to show myself compassion and I need to accept everything that has been. So when we got to the end of 2020, and I think, you know, a lot of people were just really excited to say goodbye to the year, and I was too. A lot of the work that I was doing at the end of that year, and really for the first 2 months really of 2021, was that acceptance piece, right? Was making peace with what 2020 was, because it was against what I would have wanted for myself, because it looked nothing like my goals and what I set out to achieve, because I didn't even look like the person that I was at the beginning of this decade. You know, I didn't look like the girl that started 2020. Things had completely shifted in my life. I had a new job. I lived in a new city. My way of living in my home was very different. The family dynamic had changed. Everything had changed. And there was this, I think for a while, there was sort of this disconnect between my reality and the way I would show up on social media, because I felt that whilst I was authentic and I was being myself, it did feel strange, I guess you could say, that people online had no idea what was going on behind closed doors. I think it just felt a bit strange at times, because it was like, oh, they literally have no idea that just before I logged onto this IG live to do like lockdown live, like, you know, I had to go and calm my mom down, or I had to, you know, carry my mom, or, you know, I had to speak to my dad, just all these different things. And, you know, being on the other side of it now, though, like I said before, very much so still in the process, I think the key lessons that I've learned from 2020 are to give myself grace. Give myself grace, right? Life is not a race. You have no idea what other people are going through behind closed doors. And therefore, comparison is literally futile. It is literally futile, right? Another lesson that I learned is to honor my pace. So I learned that, you know, I'm in a season where my pace has changed. I can't get things done as fast as I would like to. I remember I would try and do things and my mind would constantly be all over the place, because I'd be thinking about something for my mom and something for my dad. And, you know, then something about TTP or whatever the case may be, I was scattered. You know, looking back, I now understand that to have been anxiety and depression. But at the time, I was beating myself up, like, get it together. Why can't you do this? Why can't you, you know, put together this post? Why can't you record an episode? Other people are doing this. Why can't you do this? And looking back, I would have just given myself such a bigger hug. You know, I don't regret anything, because at the end of the day, it's part of my growth. These are growth opportunities, and these are lessons that are now embedded in me, and I can now share with you guys, right? I think that was one of my biggest lessons in terms of learning to honor my pace. And so finally, I think the biggest lesson of 2020 was that I am stronger than I think I am, but I'm still allowed to break. Up until really the end of 2020, so the end of everything, or the end of that year, should I say, I hadn't really given myself permission to break. I felt I wasn't allowed to. I felt, you know, I needed to be there for other people, which was the truth, you know, but I wasn't carving out space for myself to simply be, to be with the grief, to be with the disappointment, to be with the confusion, to be with the questions, all of that. I wasn't allowing myself that space and that time, because it takes time. It is a process, right? Grief is a process. But I am so grateful that, you know, throughout the whole entire process, even when I didn't think he was, God was holding my hand, right? And God was showing up. And one of the things I love about him is he has a way of showing up through people, right? God shows up through sometimes strangers, right? Sometimes it's that stranger in the street, or it's a message that you get when you least expected it, but most needed it. And for me, God did that and continues to do that. And so I'm just so grateful that, you know, I can finally talk about this in this way. Like I said, I'm still very much so in the process, but I'm proud of myself for doing the work to be here, to be able to talk about it, to be able to actually take lessons from it, and share that with others. And so I really, really hope that, you know, as we've had a big catch up in this episode, that in some way, maybe it's inspired you, maybe it's helped you, maybe it's healed some things for you, maybe it's exposed some areas that, you know, you'd never really considered before. Whatever the case may be, I really, really hope and pray that this has been edifying for you. I again want to say a huge thank you to you guys for all of your support, for rocking with me, for being patient with me through my quieter seasons. I'm just super, super glad to be here, to be alive. I lost my mind many times, many times last year. And so just to be is more than enough for me right now. And I'm super, super grateful for that opportunity. And I'm grateful that you are here today. That today you have been given another day to show up as yourself, to be who God has called you to be. And so I will be back soon with another episode. I just really, really, really wanted to get all of this off my chest, share this with you guys, bring you into more of my process. I don't think you can really have a podcast called Trust in the Process and not tell people about the hardest year in your life today, right? It's not on brand. It doesn't even make sense. It had to be done. Thank you for sticking with me to this point. I pray that this has been a blessing to you. And like I said, I will be back bi-weekly every Thursday with a new episode. So I cannot wait till we catch up again. But in the meantime, remember to keep trusting the process, and I will see you guys in the next one.